All right, welcome, folks. This is Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech platform. And today I have a very special returning guest. I've interviewed him once before. That went so well. Fans wanted him back. I want him back. This man is extraordinary. His name is Bob Moriarty. He lives in southern France, but he's a United States, I believe, U.S. Marines pilot veteran. Is it the Marines, Mr. Moriarty? Is that where you who you flew for?
Well, it better be.
Yes, I just wanted to be sure that I'm not messing it up. Yes, you flew hundreds of missions in the U.S. Marine Corps, including in Vietnam, correct?
Well, yeah, exactly. I flew over 800 missions. I flew primarily the F-4 and observation aircraft.
That's right. Okay, perfect. F-4, fantastic with the dipping rear. What those are, the ailerons back there that kind of dip down on that F-4. Very characteristic geography or topology of that aircraft. Anyway, I'm sorry about getting distracted. So, folks, Mr. Bob Moriarty is an author and an analyst and an expert in finance, among other things. And he's got books that you got to check out. One of them is called Basic Investing in Resource Stocks. You can find that on Amazon and other booksellers, as well as you can check out his website, 321gold.com. And he joins us today to talk about the state of the world with rising interest rates. The Fed just did another 0.75 bump. Food inflation is through the roof. We've got scarcity in many things, including energy. So that's the context. So, Mr. Moriarty, it's an honor, sir, to have you back on. Where do you want to begin with the state of the world?
Well, strange enough, and you just picked a really interesting subject. There's a site that I follow that has posted a piece by the management of Elliott Management, a hedge fund. It's one of the biggest in the world. Paul Singer.
Oh, I saw that one.
Did you really? Yeah. I mean, that's scary. Here's one of the things that I want you to add to. You and I would be considered fringe by a lot of people. And that's not because we're wrong. It's just because the mainstream is afraid to tell the truth, even though they know what's going on. Some of the things, like the debt crisis in the world, there's $300 trillion right. worth of debt. There's a couple of gigabillion in derivatives. It's going to blow up. Everybody that ever passed Economics 101 knows the debt cannot be paid. So when Paul Singer, who is one of the top guys in the world, comes out and says the global economy is in for an extremely challenging situation that could lead to hyperinflation and global society collapse. Now, when you and I say it, we're fringe. When Paul Singer says it, people need to wake up because somebody's finally telling the truth.
And you're not exaggerating. He used those exact words, quote, global societal collapse. Those are his words, not a paraphrase. And yeah, this has been making waves. I've seen the news on Market Watch and elsewhere. Well, why do you think that he's willing to say that now at this point?
Well, that's a really great question, Mike. Here's what's funny, and you and I have talked about this. The world is teetering on the edge of a massive collapse. And there's a number of people who have been predicting it for years. And I've been saying literally for the last month, guys, we're days or weeks away from a massive collapse and the banks closing. Okay. Now, I'm not the only person to see this, but Paul Singer says it, and he wants to have some credibility after the dust settles and say, well, yeah, I said the same thing.
Well, he says the extraordinary period of cheap money is coming to an end, and it has made possible a set of outcomes that would be at or beyond the boundaries of the entire post-World War II period. I mean, he's essentially saying, you know, prepare for black swans, prepare for, I mean, you know, some kind of event completely outside any modeling whatsoever. So that means all these Wall Street modeling systems cannot anticipate what's about to happen, right?
Well, I'm not sure that's true. I've done research going back to the Great Depression, and the Great Depression hit its peak, or the Dow hit its peak in early September. It crashed in late October of 1929. It declined into July of 1932, and it was an 89% decline. Now, I can give you a lot of commodities that have done the same thing. Sugar did the same thing. Silver did the same thing. Lots of commodities do it, including the stock market. But with Paul Singer, I'm going to read another quote. They estimated that markets have not fallen enough yet, and equity markets could drop more than 50% would be normal, adding they can't predict when that would happen. And that's a really important point that we need to make. It's very easy if you pass Economics 101 and you could think to predict that there's going to be a banking system collapse. The really difficult part to it is saying when. And I'm seeing a lot of signs, and certainly Paul Singer would be a good indicator. I'm seeing a lot of signs that we're a lot closer to the collapse than most people want to admit.
Okay. How does the following factor into this? Recently, MBS of Saudi Arabia, he declared that China was going to be Saudi Arabia's priority strategic trading partner. Basically, he's walking away from the 1945 petrodollar agreement status that gives the U.S. dollar the world reserve currency. And we've seen a lot of other countries talk about this, you know, the BRICS nations and also the Belt and Road Initiative. And, you know, we've heard from people like Andy Shekman on this point. And it seems very clear that it's going in that direction. What does that mean in your view, Mr. Moriarty, about the dollar, the future of the dollar and the future of the ability of the United States Treasury or the Federal Reserve to be able to even print money and find buyers for the new debt?
They have literally destroyed the currency and they have destroyed the world's financial system. And I wrote a piece, and I'll keep going back to quote this. I wrote a piece on March 1st and said that sanctions were going to destroy NATO, they were going to destroy the EU, and they were going to destroy the U.S. dollar and the United States. The United States no longer produces anything. 77% of the American economy are goods and services, and 20% of it is shuffling pieces of paper. And that's like saying you can right. run an economy. Pardon?
No, I was just laughing. You're right. It's the paper shuffle economy.
So how can you have an economy based on an Indian casino when the fact is you can't? Now, let me give you some numbers people need to think about. 31 countries support the United States and NATO in the sanctions. 165 do not. 80% of the world's population do not support the U.S.-NATO war on Russia. And it's coming to head, quite bluntly, as soon as there's a freeze and the Russian tanks can actually move, they would be mired in mud. They're going to clean Ukraine's clocks, okay? I don't care what the media says. The media keeps talking about Putin's got cancer, Putin's going to get overthrown, Putin's losing. And none of it's true, okay? Putin has been winning since the very beginning. I'm dead set against the war. However, it's a war that was predicted. Actually, it wasn't predicted. It was planned by the Rand Corporation in 2019. And they said, here's what you need to do to get Russia to attack Ukraine. This is absolutely deliberate. But some of this stuff, like the bombing of Nord Stream pipeline, that is an act of terror, but it's not an act of terror against Russia because Russia doesn't really care. The pipeline was paid for, okay? They lost a little bit of gas, but they don't really care. It was an act of terror by the United States against Germany in the EU. And Blinken comes out a couple of days later and says, this is a tremendous opportunity. Well, believe me, there's 17 countries in Europe that are triple pissed right now because they're paying seven times as much for natural gas in the form of LNG as Americans are. And they're very angry about this, and they're right.
Yeah, you really bring up an important point. It's as if the United States has declared war against its own NATO allies by destroying the Nord Stream pipelines. And just recently, we've seen another major industrial producer in Germany, I'm sorry, in France, in this case, shutting down. And it's the, I think it's called the Duralex company. They make the glass. It's kind of like Pyrex.
Right,
they just announced
right,
a shutting
exactly.
down.
The biggest glass company in France. There have been 30,000
yes.
French companies closed in the last month.
And on top of that, you've got the two largest steel plants in the world in Germany are shutting down. You've got massive shutdowns across aluminum smelting, copper smelting, you know, manganese, zinc, everything. And then BASF announcing they're doing a partial shutdown because they just don't have the natural gas that they need. So you've got fertilizer shutdowns and so on. The deindustrialization of Western Europe is starting to look more and more permanent to me. What's your take on that? Do you think they can reverse this quickly, or is this going to drag on for years to come?
Strange enough, and I really appreciate that because that's something I've been trying to address. My opinion is that Europe is in for a 5 to 10 year major depression. And as bad as this year is, and I was predicting months ago that there were going to be tens of thousands of corporations in Europe shut down because either non-availability of natural gas or prices being so high they can't afford it. Now, let me take it close to home. I use two different kind of heaters. I use pellet stoves and I use a kerosene Japanese heater. Kerosene has gone up 150% and wood pellet stoves have gone up 300%. And how many people can actually afford that? And the answer is not very many. Now, if the war ended tomorrow, it would still be a year before they could get Nord Stream back into full production, which means right. Europe's in deep, serious trouble for this year, and they might as well shut the lights off next year. It is going to be that bad. And here's the flaw, Mike. There's no shortage of energy. It's not as if we're running out of energy. That's something that the governments of Europe have done through this insanity of climate change, which is total nonsense. It's something the World Economic Forum made up. Okay, the world's 4.5 billion years old, and the climate's been changing every year, 4.5 billion years. So there have been lots of things that all of the European governments have done that hurt their energy industry. But the sanctions on Russia were absolutely the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, you make a really important point there, that this is a self-inflicted death by a thousand cuts. I mean, there's plenty of energy. They've just chosen politically or, you know, socially, because they want to conform to the obedience of the green cult. They don't want to use the energy they have for whatever reason, or at least the political leaders don't. But did you see that plan leaked out of the UK government recently, just in the last few days, a plan where they are anticipating week-long blackouts across certain regions of the UK? It was called something Yarrow, the Yarrow plan. And they're talking about having pre-scheduled days with no electricity for residents. So not only are they cutting off the commercial sector, because that's who they cut first, but then residents even would not have electricity for entire days at a time. And, you know, what do you think that's going to do to a place like London without any electricity in the middle of February or something?
Strange enough, and it's something that I predicted in another book 6 years ago, we're having the initial stages of the first worldwide global revolution. And I'll tell you, all they need to do is shut off electricity in London for a day, and you're going to have total chaos, and you're going to have crime like nobody has ever seen before. And you just emphasized a really important point. This is entirely something that they have done to themselves. France used to produce four times as much natural gas as they do now. And the climate change freaks, the eco-terrorists, have convinced the French, well, no, you don't want to produce fracking. You don't want natural gas from fracking. It's terrible. It's not green. What you need to do is go to the United States and pay seven times as much for it. Well, unfortunately, you not only use natural gas for making ammonia, for making fertilizer, for heating homes, but you produce electricity with it too. So there is absolutely going to be a shortage of electricity and of natural gas in Europe this fall. And whatever they do next year is going to be worse if they even survive this year. You are going to see governments change and revolutions start all over Europe.
You know, you make a really good point that Europe was able to stockpile its natural gas storage, you know, the underground storage caverns, for most of this year. I mean, up until just the last few months, actually, there was some gas flowing. And so the storage is relatively full. But unless there's some magical peace with Russia and some magical reconstruction of the Nord Stream pipelines, next year in 2023, they won't be filling, you know, any of these caverns or very little, which means the winter of 23/24 is going to be faced without even the buffer that they have this winter.
Well, I mean, that's yes and no, true, Mike, because here's the issue. There's two ways to get hurt through a shortage of any kind of fuel, natural gas, diesel, gasoline. One way is for it to be shut off and simply not be available. Okay. And I will give the European governments credit. They did go out and bought as much LNG and natural gas as they could, and they filled the reservoirs to about 92% to 94%, which is very good for this time of year. However, the other way that you can get hurt is the cost is so high, you can't afford it. Now, they didn't shut those steel plants and those aluminum plants because gas wasn't available. They shut them because people couldn't afford it. So there's two issues. Sure. One is it available? And of course, the other is, at what price is it available?
Yes. Well, yeah, exactly. And there's a third issue here that I'd like to ask you about, which is when I was reading the press release about the Duralux company in France, they stated that they have to shut down. They can't afford the electricity, just like you said. However, they have to keep their ovens at some kind of standby status that continue to consume energy. And it wasn't clear in the press release, but it sounds like they can't let the ovens cool down or something catastrophic would go wrong. And well, the same thing was said by BASIF.
Yes? Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's true of steel foundries, and it's true of aluminum manufacturing, and it's true of gas manufacturing. They're caught in the worst possible case. They can't afford to produce because consumers won't pay the price for their goods. So they put it in care and maintenance, but they're still using fuel, okay, albeit right, not at the same quantity. They're using overpriced fuel that they can't afford. But the worst thing is they've got no income. And the only thing that gets exactly worse than that, and this is where it's catastrophic, and that's why next year it's going to be terrible. If you shut down a glass plant or a steel foundry or an aluminum foundry and they cool down, you got to rebuild them.
Because you can't use the vessels because the glass essentially froze and became solid and gums the whole thing up. Is that why?
Exactly.
Well, Okay, that makes sense. That was my guess. And I'll have to ask our audience, if the glass factories in France freeze up, is the glass half empty or half full at that point? There's the brain teaser for the day. But the same thing is true with the steel plants, just like you said. And BASF, I was going to mention, BASF even warned that they haven't shut down their operations since the 1960s, I believe. They've been running 24/7 since the 1960s. And they've said they have to start shutting down part of their operations. But if they turn sections off, they're not sure if they can ever turn them back on again, because it hasn't been done in anyone's memory that is even working there. I mean,
that's absolutely true. And let me make a point, and I think most people will intuitively understand this. Unless and until governments get involved in economies somehow function. The people who produce goods produce what is necessary, and the people who consume goods figure out what they need at what price. Once you start dicking with that system and you start screwing up the supply chains, okay, you're going to have catastrophic reactions to it. Now, let me point something out. The United States is effectively against war, in war against Russia and Iran and Saudi Arabia and China and North Korea and Nicaragua. Are they insane? I mean, who thinks all those people are the enemy?
Well, the U.S. State Department does, you know, Victoria Nuland. And remember, the same media that tells us that Putin is weak and can't function also tells us that Joe Biden and John Fetterman are linguistic geniuses and there's nothing wrong with them. So, I mean, nothing that we are told by the West holds any water at all. It's all just endless lies. You know, including about debt and money printing and energy and everything. Go ahead.
Let me read to you a quote that's on my website, because you made another really good point. This came from William J. Casey. He was the director of the CIA at the time. "We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." Well, guess what, Mike? We're there.
Allow me to ask you about the recent Fed rate increase, another 75 basis points. This is the latest in a string of increases. And then the Fed announced that it's not the end of the, you know, they're not at a pivot point. Apparently, it's going to continue into next year. Can you tell our audience where you think this is going? And in other words, more rate increases for how long? And what are the implications of this for both the U.S. economy, but also the EU, where you live? What's happening to the Bank of England and the pensions there?
Well, you got to answer a question for me first. And the question is, which is worse, dying of cancer or dying of heart attack?
Answer, they're both just as bad. You're dead either way.
Thank you. That is the answer to your question. It doesn't make a rat's ass whether the Fed keeps pumping up interest rates or they do a U-turn tomorrow. It makes no difference. The patient is dead, and even Paul Singer has woken up to that fact.
So they're trying to stimulate the zombie patient with more money printing, but it's dead either way. In this case, it's going to be death by economic collapse rather than death by what? What's the alternative? To keep rates low? No, death by hyperinflation, I guess?
No, it's death by collapse in either way. If you keep increasing interest rates, something that's going to blow up, it's like taking a lighting a fuse to a stick of dynamite. You can try doing it with flint and steel, okay, and sooner or later it's going to light and blow. The alternative is to do the U-turn, okay, lower interest rates, and then you get hyperinflation. And I admire Singer because he's saying collapse and hyperinflation are both possible. And I'll be blunt, I simply don't care. It's an issue of lung cancer or heart attack, and who cares? They're both bad.
So interestingly, though, possessing gold or silver, the physically in your hands or that you have control over, is it insulates you from either one of these scenarios, correct?
Exactly. Insurance, the real best function of gold and silver is that they're honest money, first of all. If you've got it in your hands, it's tangible. We've had economic collapses for 3,000 or 4,000 years. It's no big deal. It's happened hundreds or thousands of times in the past. And the people who survived were the people who had real assets in their hands. So it's an insurance policy. It's not an investment.
Yeah, that's a really good point. This isn't about speculation. It's about preserving assets or freezing asset values so that they don't get eroded by the events that are taking place. Now, let me plug a couple of your books. I mentioned earlier you have a book called Basic Investing in Resource Stocks, but another one called Nobody Knows Anything, which I love the message of that, and you're debunking the so-called experts. Can you tell us a little bit about that book?
Strange enough, and that's it exactly. We have seen, and you certainly would be an expert on this, we have seen how valid science and the experts were during the whole COVID fiasco, okay? And they lied about everything, and they were wrong about everything. And now The Atlantic has come out and said, well, gee, you need to forgive us just because we made a few mistakes. Well, I'm not going to forgive them. These were the guys saying you have to believe that science, and science is Fauci. And Fauci is a liar, and he knew he was a liar. But Nobody Knows Anything shows how ordinary investors with average intelligence has so much information available to them. And if they will learn to think for themselves, they don't need to listen to experts. There are no gurus. There's a bunch of people pretending they're gurus.
Well, I saw Jim Cramer the other day crying, sobbing on CNBC, apologizing for recommending Meta stocks, which have cratered. And then a couple of days later, he was talking about why Chinese-style communist propaganda was necessary. I'm like, these are the experts that people listen to? I mean, so I agree with you, Mr. Moriarty. People need to just stop being sheeple and get back to basic critical thinking. It's really, part of it's that simple.
Well, it is that simple, and I've made those books so cheap. I think they're 99 cents in a Kindle version. If you can't afford 99 cents for a Kindle version or 10 bucks for a paperback, those are excellent books. People are going to be reading those books 50 years from now because they are simple, basic truth.
I like it. I like it a lot. In fact, I'm going to order some of your books on Amazon because I want to see what you have to say there. You've also got another book, No Guts, No Glory. What's that book about?
Well, that's the book that you're really going to enjoy because you're a pilot. For a 10-year period, of course, I was in the military for 6 years, flew a lot of combat, flew 17 different airplanes in the military. I got out and there were no jobs for pilots. So eventually I got into ferrying small airplanes from the United States all over the world. And I did about 240 trips of Cessnas and Pipers and Beech, just literally to all corners of the world. And what we didn't realize was the value of the dollar was dropping so rapidly that you could buy an airplane, you could hang on to it for 10 years, and you could sell it for more than you paid for it in the first place. So in 1979, the United States produced about 19,000 airplanes, and I think about 5,000 of them went overseas. And the book's about that period of time, that were the glory days of Varian aircraft.
So you flew Cessnas over oceans.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No guts, no glory. I guess so. That takes some guts to do that. Even over land, I'm thinking, what if I have an emergency here? I'm looking down like for cow fields and things. I've never flown a Cessna over an ocean though. But you did that as a job. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's a book you truly would enjoy because a lot of it was very boring, but there were times it got pretty interesting.
Oh, I'll bet. I can only imagine. Okay, so in wrapping this up, I mean, we've just touched on a lot of things here, but what do you really want to leave our audience with right now about things that you believe are imminent? I mean, we're recording this on November 4th. We've got an election in just a few days. Well, may I ask you what your thoughts are on this election and the outcomes?
What election? Okay. You think the Biden administration wants an old election? Are you kidding? Let me give you some numbers that I'm reading from EyeSight today. The U.S. dollar index is down 2.25, which is an enormous drop. Silver is up $1.44, which is a giant climb, and gold's up $51. And strange enough, I predicted yesterday that we had seen the bottom. We're going to have more changes in the next 6 months to a year than I think we've had in the last 20 or 30 years, maybe 50 years. There's going to be some very bad things coming. It is not a good time to borrow money. It's not a good time to have debt. It's a good time to pull in your horns and be careful. Do some research. There are no gurus out there, including me. Do your own research and learn to think for yourself and take care of your family and your city.
Well, perfect advice right there. I agree 100%. And so, folks, this has been an interview with Bob Moriarty, and the website is 321gold.com. And some of his books that we mentioned are Basic Investing in Resource Stocks, Nobody Knows Anything, and also No Guts, No Glory. Mr. Moriarty, thank you for taking the time to join us today. Hang on after this. I've got a note for you, but thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
It's been my pleasure. I really enjoyed this, Mike.
Well, me too. I admire you so much, your work, your accomplishments, your courage to speak the truth here, and you're going to help a lot of people navigate what's coming. So thank you so much. And for those of you listening, as always, feel free to repost this interview if you'd like on your own channels, on other platforms, at the risk of possibly being banned if it's on YouTube, but that's up to you. You can post it elsewhere as well. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, and you've been listening to an interview with Bob Moriarty of 321gold.com. Well, God bless you all, and take care.